Welcome to Your Path to Nonprofit Leadership, the weekly podcast that provides you with the insights and strategies to excel on your nonprofit leadership journey. I'm your host, Patton McDowell, and excited to have you join me for another transformative conversation. Now, this episode is sponsored by PMA's Mastermind Leadership Development Program, now accepting applications for the 2024 summer and fall cohorts. Now, if you're ready to enhance your leadership skills and connect with our national community of nonprofit leaders, now's the time. Go to the Mastermind page at pmanonprofit.com to learn more and apply. That is pmanonprofit.com/mastermind. In this episode, it's number 255. You're in for a treat because we're joined by Angela Grimes, the CEO of Born Free USA, which is doing wonderful work in the animal advocacy space. Angela shares her insights on nurturing dynamic and high-performing teams within your nonprofit organization. She also talks about effective hiring strategies and how to foster open communication and conflict resolution. She's going to give you something to take back to your office and elevate your team and their nonprofit organizational impact. Without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Angela Grimes. Angela, thank you for joining me on the path.
Hello, it's wonderful to be here. Thank you.
Well, I'm excited about this conversation, Angela. You have had a wonderful journey with leadership lessons galore. I know that our listeners are going to benefit from learning more about you and the leadership you have provided organizations like Born Free USA. And something that I know you're particularly passionate about is team development. You've done it very well, and you've been thoughtful about how you do it. So let me open with that question. Why do you think many nonprofit leaders sometimes struggle to transform the talent they have into a dynamic team?
Well, it's the timeless answer to why nonprofit leaders struggle with anything, really. We're working to solve some of the most critical problems in this world, and we're doing it with very limited resources. You know, we as leaders tend to focus on our programs, our impact, and our vision without placing the necessary importance on our team. You know, our vision comes to life because of the people on our team. The organization has an impact because the people on the team are doing that work. And we as leaders need to be intentional and make personnel leadership. And notice I said leadership, not management. Personnel leadership a priority.
Let me ask you that question. A great point you make. How do you define or differentiate leadership from management?
Leadership is leading your team. It has a positive connotation, and it speaks to the role of the leader in setting the tone, setting the example, being what you want from your senior management and from everybody in the team. And, you know, and language is important.
Good point. And I like your distinction there. You're modeling leadership in a sense, right? Managing could have the tactical and sometimes negative connotation, especially when it becomes micromanaging. But you've been clear about leadership, and I know we're going to unpack that, and I'm excited to do so as we provide our listeners with some takeaways to help them be better leaders and not just managers, if that's the case. So, Angela, for those listeners who don't know you, talk about your journey. What led you to the senior role that you're in now?
Well, after a couple years in corporate right out of college, I kind of stumbled into my first job in nonprofit work as right. at a symphony. And I studied music. It was important to me. And I was really struck that I could do, quote, office work for something that was meaningful. And there I learned more, and I began to climb the ladder, and I realized that nonprofit was my path.
Nice.
I also looked around at my colleagues at that symphony and could see their very deep passion and commitment for classical music, and that didn't match my own. So what I had to do was find out what was important to me. You know, taking all of the skills that I learned, you know, I like to say a budget is a budget.
Yeah,
you can do that, you know, if you're making widgets or whatever. But I had to find out what was most meaningful to me. And I knew that the welfare of animals was something that spoke to me. So I explored this more by taking a volunteer vacation to Costa Rica to help on a sea turtle project.
Oh, wow.
And I like to say it was an iguana that really set me on the path that I am today. It was seeing an iguana, seeing the monkeys that I'd only seen before in captivity, seeing them in their native habitat and how we as humans were just living in their world. At that point, what I needed to do was translate all of these skills that I had into the right job for me that would then allow me to grow and flourish and be impactful in this field.
Love it. And clearly you've taken the passion that you discovered early. And again, many of our listeners, I think, maybe have found the passion or seeking that passion. So for those listeners who don't know, tell us, what is Born Free USA and why did you join that organization?
Born Free USA is a global organization that is committed to keeping wildlife in the wild, where they rightfully belong. Our vision is a future in which humans no longer exploit wild animals and we can live peacefully and coexist in this world. And we want to ensure that all wild animals, whether living in captivity or the wild, are treated with compassion and respect and able to live their lives according to their needs.
What's the size and scope of your organization? I believe you're based in DC, right, Angela? But talk about the breadth and depth of what you're doing.
We have our headquarters in DC. We also have several people throughout the United States. We do have quite a number of remote workers. We also have a primate sanctuary in Texas that is home to more than 200 monkeys who have been rescued from the pet trade, laboratories, and other exploitive situations. Globally, we focus on wildlife crime and ending the exploitation of animals and combating the biodiversity crisis, mostly in West Africa. Okay. And our full global organization operates in East and Southern Africa, as well as Asia.
Yeah, it's impressive. And again, I'm going to encourage our listeners to check out the show notes and learn more about the work you're doing literally around the globe. And I guess having come from the corporate sector, moved into the symphony space, and then moved in now a global organization around animal welfare. Anything surprise you, Angela, early on when you were first, I guess, climbing that ladder? What surprised you and what maybe helped you along the way?
Well, I had a person who really helped me along my leadership journey. And as someone, you know, back in the day with a boss and I was in my young 20s, I operated in a space of black and white, yeah, of right and wrong. She really taught me that effective leaders operate in the gray. And she invested time in coaching me. You know, I learned the value of clear and honest and non-punitive communication and how to guide and support, building trust, creating positive work environments that get the best outcomes for everyone. She was a very influential person, sadly passed away a few years ago, but I really attribute a lot of my professional development to her.
Yeah, I love to hear stories like that. Was this someone you were working for or was she a mentor? What was literally the relationship?
She was my boss.
Yeah.
And she was the one, she knew for 18 months that I was looking for another job in animal welfare, in wildlife conservation. So I had the boss she would send me job postings like, hey, I saw this. I thought you might be interested. And wow, at the same time, continued to help me progress in my current position where I was while I was there, but encouraging me to take the next step. I mean, you really can't get a better boss than that.
But it sounds like she was thoughtful and took the time to help unpack the gray areas. In other words, I hear you and I admire that in someone, but I wonder, how did that translate? In other words, you're coming in, it's black and white, and she was the one that would help you unpack it and maybe see the nuances of leadership and other things?
Yes, and the nuances in perspectives. The nuances that policies exist for a reason, but people are people. You know, people aren't, right, black and white. They don't exist on a page or within the lines of an employee handbook. And we have to treat people as people and as whole people who have lives outside of their jobs.
Yeah, again, such an important lesson. And again, grateful to her and honoring her that you had a leader like that, that of course has inspired you throughout your journey. And I guess too, Angela, as you, your philosophies about leadership and team building, I'm assuming that is something that's grown along the way, or was there a point early on where you had a heightened awareness of the importance of team development?
It's grown along the way for me, and yeah. It has even grown since I was first the CEO of Born Free USA. I've evolved in the last few years,
sure.
And trying to create the best possible work environment for my team, because with a great place to work and people feeling valued, you get the best out of them. And we're trying to make important changes in this world, so we need the best people working on that and the solutions.
Yeah, I love that. And of course, that's going to lead us right into our topics. You and I've discussed a little bit before recording the importance of first getting talent there. So let me ask you about that, Angela. What it sounds like work environment is a key characteristic for you, but what are some of the things you do and would recommend others, other leaders do to recruit talent to your organization?
I think we have to understand and take in that we have to attract top talent. And to do that, we have to compete. We have to compete with the corporate world. If you're trying to hire a marketing manager, you're going to have to, in some way, get close to what they might be able to earn on the corporate side if you want the best person. And of course, we want the best people. These are important jobs. Our society, our planet, the most vulnerable need the best people trying to solve these problems. So that's hard because we have a societal view that part of compensation is the fact that you have the privilege of working in a job that is meaningful to you. That can even come from donors, comes from funders. It can come from boards. We have this view that 25% of budget is the maximum you can spend on operations and fundraising.
Right.
We have to shift that paradigm and say, there is value in this work. And it can be hard because we are working with limited resources. We are beholden to what our donors are able to support, you know, and what funding is out there for us. So we have to be strategic.
Such a good point. And that does shape the type of person who can thrive in that environment and be sensitive to the realities of sometimes less funding than we would like. I guess it leads to a question, Angela, because I imagine somebody's listening like, wow, I'm learning more about Angela and her organization. I'd like to work for her or an organization like that. So what are you looking for when you hire? Are there certain characteristics or particular questions you're asking as you explore whether someone would fit on your team?
I'm looking, of course, at the skills, you know, the experience that we need in the role. But beyond that, the culture fit is important. And in a hiring process, I like to spend quite a bit of time kind of getting to know how somebody communicates, what kind of relationships they like to have, what works well for them, you know, what communication do they want from their leaders? How do they communicate and lead their teams and the people in their department in the case of a senior team member? And we have to spend that kind of time both exploring who we are in the organization and being truly honest with ourselves about who we are, how we operate, and find the people that are going to fit into that so that we have a cohesive team that is working together in partnership.
Yeah, I love that. And I guess, does that translate in a tactical sense to longer interviews or you're down to the finals. Okay. I know when you're doing early stage interviews, but when you've got someone who's close to the finish line, are you saying you spend more time kind of formal, informally, or they meet other members of the senior team? What do you do to assure this, you know, critical part of bringing on somebody new?
I have people meet with their peers in the interview process. Now, I'm not one that's going to drag out 6, 7, 8, 9 interviews for somebody.
Right,
you still
right,
have
right.
to be, you have to be respectful of their time and everyone else's. But I like to have them meet with their peers. Say, if I'm hiring, you know, for the senior leadership team, they're going to be meeting with the other directors or chiefs. And also with the team that they would be managing. If that person is going to come in and there's already a team in place, have them meet with them as well. To get that feedback, because it has to be a right fit on both sides. And I want to be transparent and open about who we are and try to draw out what I can to find out who, you know, the person, the candidates are, to make sure that we have the right match.
Nice. All right, let's talk about your philosophy of professional development. I know it's important to you. Clearly, you have been a proponent. I wonder, does each member of the senior team kind of have a budget amount? You know, the classic examples of going to conferences and doing things, but literally, how do you approach professional development for, I guess, your senior team in particular?
The senior team, we do have a budget for professional development. Like many nonprofit organizations, it's not as much as I'd like it to be, because the money, you always have to make choices. But I think beyond that, it's always in the role of the CEO as the model. So there's one thing to go to, you know, a conference to learn skills, to do networking. Of course, that is very important. But part of developing the team and trying to nurture high performing partnerships within the team is really the tone that the CEO and the senior leadership set for others. You know, if we are modeling collaboration and open and respectful communication, work-life balance, then that trickles down throughout the organization.
So glad you said that. Well, Ansa, I knew you'd be a proponent of professional development and applaud what you're doing for your team. But I also want to applaud the fact that you're modeling it. And I wonder if you could speak to your approach personally to professional development. I think there are a lot of our colleagues that have arrived and now sit in the big chair and maybe are resting on their laurels. And I don't think that is a good approach. So what do you do to kind of continue to build your professional development and plan that models, of course, for your team?
Well, the thing is, we can't rest on our laurels. And part of continuing to grow and develop is having the mindset of being open to it. Yes, I'm in the big chair, but that doesn't mean I know everything. That doesn't mean that other people on my team and outside know things that I don't know. There's a quote from probably the best TV show that was cut way too soon, Sports Night, where they say, if you're smart, surround yourself with people who disagree with you.
Interesting.
And I like that, because there are people on my team. My chief development officer knows more about fundraising than I do. So I have to listen to her.
Sure.
There are also people, there are books to read. I follow people on TikTok. And you know, and listen to what they say, and take little seeds of advice on situations, other content creators, TED Talks, and think, how can I apply this? Or what does this mean to me? And I think just having that open mindset of, there are millions of people out there who know more than I do, who know different than I do. And how can I help that inform the way that I carry out my job?
What a great example of a growth mindset. The first book I give our mastermind leadership program participants is Carol Dweck's Mindset, which Angela, she embraces and literally, I think, has defined what a growth mindset is, and you just said it. So good for you. And again, what a great model that is for those that are part of your organization. Now, I noted that you suggest it's okay to bring in people that disagree with you, you know, a healthy disagreement. But how do you balance having disagreement? Again, I'm imagining your senior team, but creating a collaborative spirit. In other words, where disagreement becomes antagonistic. How do you balance that?
It starts with the environment and the culture that you have in the organization. If you have a culture of collaboration, and if you have a culture where people can feed in to whatever is happening, to someone else's opinions, to a point where people value the knowledge and experience and perspectives of others, you can head off that conflict.
Nice.
And that's not to be Pollyanna and say conflict won't occur. Of course it will. But having an environment where people feel free to give their perspective, to feed in, is the beginning of that. You know, where there's no fear that if I have a question or I disagree, that there's going to be retribution. Yeah. It's going to be met with curiosity. And it's going to be met with, you know, even enthusiasm. Tell me more about that. I hadn't thought of that. The other part, it can come as simple as, you know, this is an opportunity. I look at if someone disagrees with something that I say, or if, let's say somebody disagrees with a policy, having that space where they are comfortable saying, I disagree with this. Can I talk to you about it? That's an opportunity for me to either explain why, as opposed to them just sitting and stewing about I can explain why, even if I'm not going to make a change, or that gives me the opportunity to say, well, I hadn't thought of it that way. And I'll give a very brief example.
Sure.
Just somebody within the last year came to me and said, I really don't agree with our bereavement leave policy. It had specified the certain family members that it applied to. And this person had somebody who passed away, who was very important to them, who was like a family member. And she said, I really think our policy should be more expansive. And this person is like a family member to me. They're just as important as my grandmother, my aunt, or, you know, whoever might be listed in that policy. And I immediately was like, you're right. You are absolutely right. We have chosen families. We have families. We have people who are like family. And I changed our policy within a week.
Good for you.
And that's, you know, but then there have been times we come and say, I don't understand this policy. I say, well, I get that. Here's why it is that way. I'm not going to change it, but I really appreciate that I have this opportunity to talk to you about it. Yeah. And when you greet people with that kind of openness and just respect for their opinion, then you perpetuate that kind of environment throughout. That kind of respectful communication and collaboration gets infused throughout the entire team.
And that's how you set a culture, isn't it? Exactly what you said, Angela, that if there's literal evidence like that, then people will respect that this is a culture I can disagree. I may not always get what I want when I disagree, but you've also assured there's not retribution when there is something you want to bring up. And you also demonstrated you're willing to listen and adjust when necessary. So that to me is certainly evidence of a great leader. Let's talk about conflicts. You referenced it. Yeah, every organization has them. Do you have a certain approach to that? When conflicts do occur, how do you approach them, and any ideas or recommendations as to how to do so better?
One of the things that I like to do is, first of all, talk to whoever's bringing a conflict or a problem to me, to talk to them about what's really going on. You know, it may not, they may come to you and say, this other person didn't get my project done to this standard or on time. So, and that is a thing that happened, but we have to be willing to explore why the issue occurred.
Yeah.
Is it something with our procedures? Were things communicated to that person? that didn't get the job done. Maybe they had something going on in their personal lives, and we just need to give them a little bit of grace. Or maybe the person who's bringing that conflict to you has something going on in their lives, or they're not feeling successful, or they're feeling that, you know, whatever is going on has a deeper meaning to them. I think we have to dive into the root cause, because it's not always just that very surface level conflict or challenge that comes to you. And I think you have to have that kind of communication. And when there is conflict, we need to bring people together and do that respectfully, not going through, you know, various, you know, layers and emails, and just have open and honest conversations. If we as leaders try to dance around things and not just speak clearly and directly, we're going to do more harm than good.
Yeah, I can't help but harken back to the wonderful boss and mentor and coach you had early in your career, because you just described, I thought beautifully, the gray areas of it. At first, it might appear the conflict is black and white, right? But you're taking the time to have a conversation and realize there's actually maybe more behind this story or behind the scenes, right? And that might help you get to the root of the conflict, where most people might stop. And you're right, we're too quick to just email our way through it. And that might only exacerbate the tension and the conflict that's going on.
Absolutely. Email is probably one of the worst ways to communicate in many regards.
Right, right. All right, well, let me shift gears with you. As you know, many of our nonprofit leaders listening have a relationship, good to bad, maybe, with their board of directors. And, you know, I hear it all the time from leaders I'm speaking with, that they've got either they're disengaged sometimes, or they're trying to micromanage them. So I'm not assuming that is the case for you in either sense. But talk about the size and scope of your board and how you keep them engaged.
I have a board of 7 to 9 members. And I think the key to engaging with them is to really drive their enthusiasm and buy-in. You know, our board members are serving because they care as much about this cause as we do. They're also doing this, you know, when I talked about our employees having lives outside, this is part of their outside life.
Yeah,
they're choosing to spend their free time and volunteer to help you be successful, help the organization be successful. So we have to share our plans. We have to share our visions. We have to share our dreams. We also have to listen to theirs. You know, what are their hopes and dreams for this organization? I think we also have to celebrate our wins, but we have to be transparent about our challenges as well. Got to give them the metrics, show the impact that they're creating, and then pull them in as well about how to overcome some of the challenges that we're having when we're not being as successful. One thing I really like to do is kind of toss out the idea of that the old board agenda where staff come in and report out.
Yes.
And here's what we've been doing the last 3 months, and here's what we're going to do the next 3 months. Possibly giving a bunch of statistics and data, you know, and what that leaves is a very one-sided board meeting that doesn't draw people in.
So true. I think you heard me audibly groan when you described that all too familiar board meeting agenda. And I'm delighted to hear you say that, hey, there's a different and better way to do it. And how often does your board meet? And Angela, are they all over the place? I guess, are you dealing with dynamics of a board that literally is pretty well spread out?
Our board is spread out throughout the United States and in Europe. So we have time differences as well to deal with. So we meet quarterly or 4 times a year. And it is mostly by Zoom, by virtual. Conference.
Yeah.
I'm very excited that our first board meeting this year in April will be in person for the first time since 2020. And that's another kind of aspect. I think it is important to meet in person. And it's very easy when you're looking at that gap between what you think next year's expense budget is going to be and your reasonable income projection, and you're looking at what can we cut. The costs of an in-person board meeting are easy ones to say, we can just do it on Zoom.
Right.
But there are times when it's very important, and, you know, especially, you know, for us, strategic planning. This is an important time to sit together in a room and have these conversations in person as much more productive. You know, normal board meetings with agenda items that engage them with, you know, pre-reads on all the stats, you know, executive summaries, those are great, but certain things really are good to do in person.
Yeah, I'm delighted you're able to do that, which I acknowledge is logistically for you is much more difficult than organizations that maybe have their boards, you know, more local. I'm glad that you're able to bring them together maybe on an annual basis. And of course, you mentioned the investment necessary, which I know will pay off in that case. But let's talk about investment, specifically fundraising, which, as you know, is always on the top list of nonprofit leadership elements. Sounds like you have a very talented development leader on staff, but how do you approach fundraising? How much of your time is invested in that activity?
My time is really led by her. You know, I tell her, I will do what you need.
Nice.
So I probably spend about, I would say maybe about 25%, if not more. I've never even really thought about how that breaks down.
Yeah, sure.
You know, but that can be, you know, here are the people I'd like you to write to this week. Here are the people I'd like you to give a call to. That will be meetings, you know, but then also the, you know, just working with her on strategy, you know, working with her on, you know, discussing how things are going, anything that we might need to do, testing. You know, one of the things that we're doing this year is really trying to try some new and innovative things, which kind of brings, I'll get off on a little tangent here.
That's okay.
I think that part of success has to be allowing failure, you know, and that we have to test things, and it has to be okay that some things aren't going to work, and we have to budget for that. You know, we have to do A/B testing. We have to find out what our audiences are going to respond to. So part of success in fundraising is trying new things and it being okay if they don't work. But what you take from that is, what did we learn? You know, it's not what went wrong. It's what did we learn from that? What did we learn from our tests? How can we make adjustments moving ahead so that we can incorporate, you know, changes to then become more successful?
Is there an example of an experiment or test or attempt that you've tried in the last year or so, whether it succeeded or failed? Of course, I admire the fact you're willing to do so, but I wonder if you have an example.
If you think about, you know, your traditional direct marketing, you know, your mail program,
right?
And if you're doing any sort of acquisition, most likely you have a package that works. You know, you've got the topic that engages people the best and really draws them into the organization. But you have to try other topics because maybe that isn't the best. Maybe that's not what people care about the most, or the story that you're telling. So you might take a, you know, your control package, your regular package, and tweak the language and plan to send that out to 10,000 of the 100,000. You might try a whole new topic. One year back when I was actually the development director, I decided to try a package because I thought, I'm going to bring people in on the whole of who Born Free is rather than just one issue. And this will be great for retention. And it failed miserably, you know? But what I learned was people need to be engaged in an issue. They don't want, who are you? They won't want a broad scope. They want to know what you're doing about something that's important to them. And so, you know, we mailed to, say, 10,000 people this package that bombed. But we learned something from it. And the only way to know that is to try it.
Such a good example. Thank you for sharing. As a recovering fundraiser myself, I was nodding in agreement with you throughout the before and after of that type of experiment. But good for you for trying those kinds of things, because you'll never learn, right, if we don't. And if we don't create a culture where that kind of experimentation is at least acknowledged and supported. Couple final questions for you, Angela. Number one, where's Born Free USA going? You know, in other words, putting your strategic hat on, is there a headline or two as you think about the next 5 years?
Yes, we are in a growth phase right now. We are looking at increased impact in our ability to make changes for animals in this world. We are looking at addressing the biodiversity crisis and expanding our conservation work and the work that we are doing to be a part of trying to turn around this extinction crisis that we're facing. We are looking at for our primate sanctuary in South Texas. We will be embarking on a capital campaign to replace and build out some of our aging infrastructure, as well as to add to it so that we can take all of the experience and knowledge that we have and turn the sanctuary itself into a place where people who are aspiring animal caregivers, people who are primate experts, veterinarians, can come and learn from people who set the standard. We are the gold standard for care. We are turning this sanctuary and our property there and our programs there to be able to expand that and share our expertise with the rest of the world. It's really an exciting time.
Exciting is exactly the word I was going to use, and good for you. And it's going to be fun to follow you and your organization. And I know our listeners will enjoy doing just that. I guess last question on a personal organization tone. How do you stay organized, Angela? It sounds like you're doing about three jobs in one, at least. And I wonder, have you found things that literally help you on a personal level stay organized and kind of keep the most important things front and center?
My key to being organized is calendar. I have to put everything in my calendar. If it's in a notebook, I'm not going to see it.
It's lost.
If it's in my brain, it's going to fall out 5 minutes before I needed to know it. You know, so I always say I'm absolutely useless without my calendar reminders, and
so true.
And just use that. And the other thing is keeping things tidy. My inbox, you know, even my workspace, I like to keep as much clear so that my focus is on what I need to get done, not the environment around me or not the clutter, you know, in my files, in my inbox, on my desk. I thrive in tidiness.
Yeah, I'm so glad you say that. Again, I'm referencing our mastermind program. We've got a cohort right now of 8 executive leaders all over the country, and they just talked about that, Angela, decluttering, how much more effective they could be if they did what you said, you know, clear out the inbox, clear the pile on their desk or on the home counter that I think we all have somewhere. But the power of having a tidy desk is, in fact, something it sounds like has made you even more effective.
It seems simple, but I think we all have to identify the environment and the ways that work best for us and stick to it, you know, and like I've said on other things, be intentional about these things.
Love it. Angela, you've given our listeners a ton of takeaways wherever they are on their journey, whether it's early stage or if they're in a senior chair themselves. Thank you for sharing. I wonder if you have any final advice, or what would you want a nonprofit leader listening right now to take away?
I would say be intentional about culture and make room in your calendar and your mind to have those conversations. It's not something that happens if you're not putting real effort and real time to it. One other thing that I like to talk about is breaking down departmental silos and realizing that everyone in the organization, regardless of their job title or what they do, is integral to carrying out our mission. Our mission doesn't happen if the bookkeeper doesn't pay the bills. They're also integral to fundraising. Everyone is a fundraiser. That doesn't mean you're out there writing appeals, writing emails, you know, having meetings, but you're a representative of the organization. And even in a marketing meeting where the fundraiser is, you know, the chief fundraiser is attending, there's communication back and forth that sparks ideas. So if we all keep that in mind, that we are integral parts of this organization, we work together, we partner together to carry out our mission, no matter who you are and where your name is on that org chart.
Fantastic. And no surprise, you have been very successful at nurturing dynamic and high performing teams because it's things just like that. So, Angela, can I ask for one more parting gift? As you know, I have asked every guest on this show, if we've approached 270 episodes now, not too far off in the future, a book that has been meaningful to you on your journey that you might recommend to our listeners.
There's a book that I have actually just recently started reading that has been incredibly helpful, and it has nothing to do with what I've just talked about
That's today. All right. That's okay.
It's The Circle of Nine Muses by David Hutchins, and it talks about strategic storytelling. And this book really has given me a framework that my brain needed to be able to think about our strategic planning process and how to formulate that and how to draw my vision out of my own brain and get it into, you know, words and be able to communicate that, but as well as draw out from others to get them to input into it. I found it very helpful. I haven't even finished it yet, but I am finding it very, very helpful. And it was almost like a magic key. I needed to unlock something to help me change the way I was thinking.
Love that. And clearly a inspired recommendation if you're already putting it out there for others, if you're still working your way through it, but it's clearly having an impact on you. And I'm grateful you're willing to share it. So, all right, Angela, people are now more interested in you and the great work you're doing. So where do you want them to go to find out more about Born Free USA and the great work you're doing there?
People can go to our website. It is bornfreeusa.org.
That puts it right in the place we will include on the show notes. We will link it up, your website, and maybe your LinkedIn, if that's okay, so people can connect with you and learn more about the exciting things on the horizon for you and the organization. So for all of that, Angela, thanks again for joining me on the path.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Angela as much as I did and found her insights both empowering and practical as you take it back to your nonprofit organization. Now, for more information about Angela and the great work she is doing, as well as additional resources related to our discussion, make sure you check out the show notes. Just go to the podcast page at pmanonprofit.com, and there you'll find valuable information to support you on your path to nonprofit leadership. Now, if you found this episode as enlightening as I bet you did, please share it with someone else on the path. They can benefit from Angela's expertise as they ponder their journey to nonprofit leadership. And if you haven't already, make sure you subscribe to this podcast. Just go to pmanonprofit.com, navigate to the podcast page, and all you got to do is click on the follow button. By clicking on that, you will not miss any of our weekly episodes. They come out every Thursday. Of course, while you're on that podcast page, you can hit the episodes button at the top of the page and browse through thumbnails of our most popular episodes or search by topic or guest name. By the way, don't forget to sign up for our new Thursday Leadership Lens email newsletter. Again, on Thursday, you will get the very latest, not just on the podcast, but some of the great content we're producing to help you be a better leader in the nonprofit sector. Just go to pmanonprofit.com and subscribe today. Thanks once again for all you're doing in the nonprofit sector, especially right now. And please continue to do the good work for organizations that mean the most to you. We'll keep bringing you content to help you do it even better. Have a great week. I'll see you next time on The Path.